Welcome to the Money Insights Podcast, where high income earners come to learn wealth building strategies that will take them from high income to high net worth. With your hosts, financial and wealth building experts, Christian Allen and Rod Zabriskie.
Welcome into today's episode of the Money Insights Podcast. I'm Christian Allen. He's Rod the Pod Zabriskie. And today, Rod, we're talking collectibles.
Yes, we are.
I think the question is does anybody actually invest in collectibles? That's my first question. Now, I should be really clear. This is Rod's idea. Rod wanted to do the collectibles pod, and I'm just along for the ride. I'm just kidding. I actually like collectibles. And to your point, when we were talking before the pod, Rod, that rhymed. Before we got on here, I actually do have a collectible.
Yes.
So
yes,
I'm a collectible investor.
And at the time, you weren't necessarily thinking of it that way, but that was definitely an angle. That was definitely, there was a method to buying it that way. So
you're right. There was a method to the madness. Okay. So we'll get into that. Okay. So today we're talking collectibles, Rod. And I think this is one of those topics that people hear about and they think, oh, that sounds like an interesting idea. That sounds kind of fun. But I think most people are kind of like, well, you invest in real estate. Like, you don't really invest in like watches and cars, do you? But here's the deal. You, who meets with people constantly, do see these things, and they actually can have a powerful, impactful place, and they can be kind of fun, right?
Yeah.
So investing doesn't have to be all work. It can be fun. And so when you get into the collectible world, you get the benefit of being able to kind of go in whatever direction you have interest. Anyway, okay. So that being the case, Rod, let's start under like to get a feel what collectibles are. Where do you want to start?
Yeah. Well, maybe the best place to start is this. When we often talk about investing alternatives, the easy ones are real estate and business. And often what happens is we're like, someone wants to know, well, what kind of things do you mean when you say alternatives? And we say real estate and business and you know, other things.
The other stuff, notes and, you know, all the 53 different types of real estate investing you can do. And then we're like, okay, maybe precious metals or private equity. Anyway, but to your point, it almost starts and ends with real estate and various types of business.
Yeah.
So we wanted to bring in something a little bit different. And again, we do see people on a regular basis who invest in various types of collectibles.
Yeah. So this ended up being a topic where, like you say, we hear about it on a regular basis, but we've never really explored it on our podcast or in any of our like webinars or presentations or whatever. So we're like, man, we should touch on it. So,
okay, Rod, what are collectibles? Like, define it a little bit.
Yeah, so they're tangible, right? And we're gonna speak about tangible because I know there are non-fungible, whatever. Like, there are other things out there that are like.
Okay, so tangibility is important in this conversation.
That's what we're focusing on. Yes, tangible objects, and they're valued. They have desirability to them. Because of nostalgia, some rarity, some historical significance, aesthetic appeal, even sometimes like a mistake that was made with one batch that then all of a sudden that's why it has value. So, but it's just whatever people like. That's really what it comes down to.
I think I might have another collectible, Rod.
Okay.
I just thought of it. Well, once we go into like sharing our own stuff, I'll get into that. It just crossed my mind. I'm like, oh, wait, I've got another fun one.
Sweet.
What you said kind of rang a bell to me. I'm like, oh yeah, it's like these types of things. And suddenly it came to my head and man, I am excited to share because this thing is worth top dollar.
Okay. But that's the thing it's worth like it. Its financial worth is beyond its like intrinsic value, right?
That's very much the case. Like if you think about a baseball card, obviously it takes 10 cents to put together a baseball card. And yet if you've got Nolan Ryan's rookie card, that thing, especially if it's in mint condition, man, I remember the good old days, Rod. I was never a baseball card collector. Yeah. I never got into the cards, but my older brother did. And he had this when he was young. I remember him having this like big like baseball box. It had a big like plastic baseball player on the top of it. You'd open it up and you'd have all of his. And I'm sure he didn't have a single valuable baseball card in that collection, but he was all out, man. He was collecting those. So the interesting thing, though, is that like we see some of these. I'm thinking about like Michael Jordan memorabilia, right?
Yeah.
You see that stuff can go for crazy amounts of money.
Yeah.
And so if you owned it and were willing to be patient, like it absolutely could be something that provides a significant return, you know, or you can just keep it for, you know, for nostalgic purposes. But again, having the value with it does give you an option, you know, if and when you were in a difficult situation and needed to find something of value to sell.
Yeah. Well, and the people who are doing it are, and being strategic about it, it's trying to like build to a place where you can sell it for more, right? So you buy it.
Yeah.
And like you said, it can be like holding that value. And for a lot of people, it does that partly because it has some meaning to them as well. That's why they bought it in the first place. And then there are others who are just looking for these opportunities to buy it and sell it. And for whatever reason, they're able to, you know, make a lot off. And sometimes it's strategic, right? If you're really into this kind of thing and you're like going around to yard sales or something and finding rare stuff that the seller just doesn't realize what they have, well, there can be something to that. But even in just like the open market of collectibles, we talk to people who buy and sell, and somehow they just know the way to buy it at one value and turn around, whether it's soon or years down the road, and sell it and just make a really good profit on it.
Well, in a lot of ways, it's not any different than someone who's good at investing in real estate. If you spend your time, energy, effort investing in watches or cars or whatever it is and learn how it works, then you can do a lot with it. And so one of the fun, like, again, I keep hitting on this, but one of the bigger appeals to investing in collectibles is that a lot of times they can be things that you really enjoy, you're interested in. And so it becomes less work to put into that and more like a hobby almost. But what's better than a hobby that you can like make some serious money on too?
Right. Well, and I think that's one of the reasons why often it brings value is it's rare, right? Or vintage or whatever. And there's probably not a lot of people who know about it and want it, but those people who do know about it and want it are willing to pay a lot for it to get it. So that's what kind of adds to that.
Smaller market. Yeah. It's has a niche market, but like you said, oftentimes the people who are interested in it in collectibles have a lot of money, right? Like I would say that it's pretty common for when we do see people who are investing in collectibles, most often they're doing pretty well and maybe they've started in some other area and then like graduated or decided to take a little bit of a detour and go into something that's a little bit more, you know, a little bit interesting to them. Okay, Rod, so tell me this. What do you see or what do collectibles offer? What's the appeal to collectibles that we may not typically get with like, you know, a more traditional investment, just stocks, bonds, mutual funds, whatever?
Yeah, great question. I think in some ways it is in and of itself a unique category that not everybody is participating in. We kind of talked about that already.
Yeah. So there's some like exclusivity to it.
Yeah. And then for the people that I often talk to, it is something where they either just got really enamored by the idea of getting involved with it, or they just happen to like it. And all of a sudden they're like, oh, but not many people know this, but you know, if you can find this, that, or the other of this category, and like we've been using examples, right? Pens or cars or baseball cards or whatever. And again, we'll get into more examples of what these are, but then it almost like you fall into it. And because of the hobby, because of the interest, because something you already have, or maybe your grandpa, you know, introduced it to you or whatever. And so a lot of people just end up falling into it. But I can tell you this, if you think about the kinds of things that you already know and like, I guarantee you there are collectibles out there that you could tap into if this was of interest to you.
Okay, so it could be like you're saying here, it could be something that you're interested in. That's a benefit. What about from a return perspective, right? If we're, because at the end of the day, we're talking about collectibles as an investment. How does like the risk return profile compare to other types of things? And maybe what can we expect going in, or what are we trying to get going in?
Right, and that very much depends on what it is. And timing as well. So for example, you think about like a Michael Jordan type of memorabilia. Well, chances are it was most valuable around the time he retired for the second time.
Yeah, maybe. Although today, man, like if you sell a card for Michael Jordan card from back in the day, 25 years later, it's not that often, but I occasionally, you know, I'm a sports guy. I like tapping into the Ringer and the Athletic. And so like sometimes I'll see these emails that come across or and it's like XYZ Michael Jordan card sells for $7.8 million or something like that.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So it can be huge regardless.
And Michael Jordan was maybe not the best example because, okay, so I did collect baseball cards as a kid, and my initial like prized card was Don Mattingly. Because it was a rookie
card. I don't even know who that is.
He played for the Yankees. And that's actually bringing up my point. Okay, so he played for the Yankees. I think he was drafted in like whatever, 1983 or something, maybe even a couple of years before.
The year I was born.
And I was already collecting cards at that point. I was 8 years old. And I just got lucky, right? Anyway, so I had his rookie card. So then I tried to preserve it in a hard plastic.
In a case.
Yep.
Nice. So does it reside there today?
It is still in the hard thing. Well, so put it this way.
Should we go put that on the market?
It had its highest value when he retired. So that was actually why I brought
that
up.
Okay. That makes sense.
So for a player like that, who a lot of people of that generation know and knew and followed and whatever. So there was some nostalgic value to it. And there might be a few people out there that would care about it now, but it rose at its highest value was when he retired. So getting back to your earlier question, it's going to differ from item to item as to how you can do those things. But there are trends, right? There are there's pricing history on that individual item or in that category where you could follow a trend and say, okay, you know, this whatever it is. Is worth this right now. I'm going to buy it. And because of certain things that are anticipated to happen between now and whatever, later this year or 5 years from now, whatever it is, the trend is going to push this value higher. And you would know that because you've studied it, you've seen it, you've looked at other items in that category.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes a lot of sense. When I think of like the value proposition of investing in collectibles, there's two things that are coming to my mind right now. And then I'm sure there's a lot of other benefits, but here's two that are coming. Number one, diversification.
Yeah.
Right. So we haven't really talked about that. Obviously, if, you know, 80% of what I do is in real estate, then there's probably some logical sense in investing in other things so that when real estate isn't doing as well as we hope, we have opportunities that could be still doing well.
Yep.
So certainly collectibles are a form of diversification. And to your point, they can be like unique, like niche diversification that kind of is even above and beyond like typical stuff you would see.
Mm-hmm.
That's one. And then the second one I would say, and I can't decide how accurate I am on this, but I think of big returns. Like I think of shooting for bigger returns, mm-hmm. right? So now I have gold, and I won't say that my rare coins that I expect it to go up like massively. It's more mm-hmm. of a hedge. But I think if I was investing in like cards or like if I was, you know, trying to do art or those kinds mm-hmm. of things, I'd probably be doing it with the intent to create significant returns in there. At least that would be the goal, yeah. right?
Yep.
And what we know is that if we can do it and do it well, there certainly are a lot of opportunities to create larger returns. That's been our experience when we talk to people. Like people wouldn't do it if there wasn't an opportunity to create, you know, real money in it.
Right.
So that's a big deal. Those are the two that are coming to my mind. What are we missing that we should hit on? before we start talking about some of the different various types of collectibles.
Yeah, I think as a category, you would think you have to think of it as speculative because obviously we don't know the future, right? Which is true when you buy a stock or when, you know, whatever, right? Like you only buy it if you think the value is going to go higher. That's obviously speculation. However, as with a stock or real estate, buying in the right place or buying into a business when it's still in its formative stages, but you think it's going to take off, or in any of these other categories, you can put a method behind it, right? You can become knowledgeable enough in a category so that when you look at that artwork or you look at the rare coins or whatever, if your aim really is to create that really big return, and so you're, again, not going all in on just one thing, but spreading yourself, you know, across a few different items to try to make that happen. But if that's really your goal, it's really doable. People are out there doing it right now.
Crazy. It's crazy. Okay, Rod, we've been floating around some various types of collectibles. Yeah. We've thrown some out. Maybe give us a list. Give us examples of different types of collectibles that people could consider and that we see commonly or even not commonly, just different examples that we see out there.
Yeah. First we'll hit on the more common stuff and then we'll hit on just some fun things that we kind of stumbled across as we were preparing for this. So the first one is art. And this one,
art's a big one.
Maybe one of the first things anyone would think of in this category. And I mean, with art, again, there can be a lot of different reasons why a particular piece of art is worth so much. And, you know, it could be just who the artist was that lived 300 years ago, but you still know their stuff and it's the Mona Lisa or whatever. And obviously that one would have enormous value, much more than probably any of us could afford. But there are other maybe pieces of art from that same artist that just because of that notoriety, any piece of art would add value. But then bringing it
present day. You're an art guy, right?
I like art. Yeah.
You're not like so I guess the question I'm getting at is why don't you invest in art, Rod? Maybe you should.
I've thought about it. Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm going to continue to encourage it. You're an art guy. I feel like you're the guy that's like going to go into the art festival and like really take time at each painting and like pick it apart. And I'm the guy that's going to like walk by like, oh, that's cool. That's cool. Like, so maybe art could be a thing for you. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. Well, there's something to both of those things. Cause sometimes I look at art and that is really popular or really like worth something. And
you're like,
and especially the abstract art type of stuff where it's just like splashing some color on a canvas.
And hard to like understand that, where the value comes from.
Yeah, that
from,
mix
right?
of colors and somehow the composition of how they all come together does more
like,
than
ah,
just.
Does that look more like my 5-year-old's paintings like an incredible like masterpiece, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes it's hard for us like inexperienced art. Well, what do you call connoisseurs? Well, we can't say that. Whatever someone that's not. The opposite of it. Okay. Novice. That's the word.
Yeah.
Okay. So art's a good one. What are some other things that we can invest in?
Yeah. So then there are antiques. And again, this is another one. There have been antique shows, you know, forever, as long as.
Yeah. Those are the antique roadshow. That's a fun one.
Yeah.
Like on Channel 11, you get those people going in. They talk about their, you know, their great, great grandmother's beer stein mug. What's it worth? And suddenly they're like, this is authentic. It's worth $14,000.
Yeah. And it's a payday for that person.
It's an interesting one, man.
Yeah. And it can be all kinds of different things, which again, if you've watched those shows, you know this, right? It can be furniture, jewelry, ceramics, silverware, all kinds of different things, a clock, you know, whatever. But again, it's like, where was it made? Who was it made by? You know, what time period? Where, you know, is it a knockoff? All that kind of thing. And there's always that
you
moment.
You can't have knockoffs, man. No knockoffs. It's no good. Because it's always so sad when the people go, they're really excited about this thing that they've, and they go there and find that it's like, it's a knockoff and it's worth like next to nothing. Oh, it breaks my heart every time. Rod, we have a client that invests in antiques, but not in the same way. I was thinking of Rocky's Pawn Shop.
Yeah.
Right? Our guy Rocky, who basically makes a living quote unquote, investing in antiques and moving different things. Like, it's kind of an interesting dynamic, and he's done really, really well. He's had a really great career doing that. Yeah. So again, just kind of an example of someone who got into, in that case, is more like his industry, but it's also like, I think shows the opportunity to buy things and sell them at a much higher price. Right. Again, it's just understanding the dynamics. Now, this is what we always tell people, but like, you don't want to go shoot from the hip in collectibles, right? If you're actually there to make money, you're going to have to do some research. And so that's kind of why we talk about finding things that you're interested in. That way, doing the research is more fun than it is work.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, we'll get into this more in the end, but knowing how to get started and how to plan for an exit, right?
Yeah, that's a good point. Okay. So we've got art, we've got antiques, we've got coins. Rod, that's what, I got coins, man. Can I just tell you though, I was surprised at some things as I went through the process. So we had, oh my gosh, I forgot her name, but from ITM Trading that came on. She was a firecracker. I liked her. But anyway, she huge believer in gold. And I was like, okay, I'm convinced. I'll get some gold. And they said, you got to get these rare coins. Like, and they gave me all the reasons and I bought it. I'm like, okay, I like the rare coins. I think it makes a lot of sense. But can I just tell you, and this is like a learning experience for people, because I didn't know this. When you buy something like gold, it immediately has like a depreciation to where you can't just like sell it back for the same price. Like, it's really bizarre how it works. So like, it's funny because the value of my gold has gone up, not like a ton, but I've probably had it for a year and a half. Right. And it's probably gone up like, you know, the supposed value is up like $7,000 or $8,000. But if I were to go sell that, I would have to sell it for like 70 cents on the dollar.
Right.
Super confusing. Yeah. My point there isn't to say don't invest in gold. I think that it certainly has a place, but again, I did that. I probably should have done more research and understood what those dynamics are before I even did that. So maybe just a cautionary tale to make sure when you're doing this investing, when you're getting into collectibles, because they're a little bit more niche, probably you're going to take a little more time and effort to get a feel for it.
Yeah. And that's a good example of also depends on how you buy it, right? Because if you were just going to an individual seller, then what you're describing wouldn't have been the case. The reason it happened is because you pay a fee, right? So you pay a broker fee to buy it. And then again, if you were to turn around and sell it to another broker, you would pay a fee. And so it messes with the value when you're doing that. So be aware of that.
Yeah. And honestly, I didn't know that. Like, I had no idea. Yeah. So that was a learning experience. Okay, so we've got art, antiques, we've got coins and stamps. Okay, Rod, this is a good one. Well, I say it's a good one just because I think of all the examples of how stamps just on their own go up in value, but rare stamps, that's kind of a thing.
Yep.
What do you know about rare stamps?
I know just a little bit, but just basically what you're saying, like, and what we described earlier, the stamps that have value because there were very few that were printed, or it has some just really significant tie to an historical event or something like that. So that's what brings the value, right? It's not the paper it's on. It's the, what it is and the significance.
it's not the little bit of sticky part. Okay. all right. So art, antiques, coins, rare books and manuscripts. That's kind of a fun one, man. If you're into rare books, and I haven't met anybody that does this, but I think it's kind of a fun idea. When I think about it, I'm like, like you could actually have a lot of fun going to like old bookstores and like making this kind of a hobby thing. But again, a hobby that can produce like real money, real results. So it's kind of fun that way.
And then manuscripts is an interesting one too, because you take a handwritten document from, you know, whoever, Thomas Jefferson or something, and that has value.
That would be super cool.
Right.
That would be super cool.
A lot of that kind of stuff. Again, going back to the historical.
And get Hamilton's. I want some Hamilton writing.
There's got to be a lot of that out there. He wrote a ton. I hear
he was a prolific writer. That's what the play taught me.
Yeah.
Rare book. Okay. Vintage toys and comics, Rod. Do you have any vintage toys?
I probably do. They're definitely not in mint shape.
Maybe one of those like old horses that you go down and say, like, if you've got one of those, Rod, that could really be worth something.
Yeah. Or I'm thinking some of the Fisher Price stuff that I grew up with as a kid, and
some like some classic Tonka trucks.
Yeah. They're not in good condition, unfortunately. Okay. So we actually played with our
toys. That is going to be a problem. Lincoln Logs. No, Lincoln Logs probably aren't worth much. Okay. But it's kind of a funny idea, right? And we certainly know comics, right? Comics are huge. Mm-hmm. Well, obviously, right? Comic-Con it was probably like the first con out there. And it is absolutely massive. So aside from people just being interested in comics in general and having a large base, like the value is pretty incredible. If you've watched The Big Bang Theory ever, you know the value on those can be really significant. And you also know that it's incredibly important to make sure they are in mint condition.
Yes.
So that's what I know about investing in comics. Those two things. Can work awesome. and you got to keep them good. Okay, what else did we miss?
Yeah,
we talked got a bunch bit of about, stuff.
Talked a little bit about memorabilia. Let's hit on that a little bit, because this one is, it's kind of interesting and kind of in some ways. I'll bring up an example. So do you remember? Well, you don't follow baseball at all. So, but there was a World Series back in probably 2003 or something. Kurt Schilling is pitching. He gets injured, and he's still in the game pitching, but his ankle is bleeding. So the bloody sock from that is
his ankle was bleeding. That's weird.
And he stayed in the game, kept playing. I think they won. I think that's why it's that much more significant. But so sometimes it's just like the jersey or the shoe. Right. And that Michael Jordan was wearing in the 96, championship or whatever. But then sometimes it's like really kind of bizarre stuff that rises to the top. It's kind of
memorabilia
fun and kind of weird all at the same time.
Okay. So that's a handful of the ones that are like the most common we typically see. Now I'm going to jump in. I'm going to talk through some of the others. Rod, I didn't realize you had this one on here. Okay. So you have the 10 less common. The first one is classic video games. Okay, Rod, that's actually what I was going to.
Okay.
I have got the original Nintendo box in like really good condition even today. Nice. So I don't know if it's worth any. Yeah. Very first version. First version. And a good handful of those big old games. You had to like blow in them to try to get it to work when the console wasn't working.
Yep. Slide it in just right.
Oh, wait, sorry. That one's the Super NES. So the other one, you go in the little slot. The Super Nintendo is the one that goes on top. Anyway, I've got a couple because I bought one from somebody years ago because my son Cannon was a Mario fanatic. And so he was really excited about the original games, and somebody had one of those. And anyway, I bought it for probably more than, I don't know. Maybe it was worth, maybe I got a deal on it, Rod, now that I'm seeing this. I'm going to go put it out on the market and see where we're at. Actually, Canon would be mad at me, but okay. Classic games.
They're making them again now. So you could sell the old one and just buy a new one and make a profit.
Well, okay, so I have that too. I have a little. What happens is they make the new ones, but they're not quite the same. So I have a new one, and it's like a little console, and it just has 25 or 30 classic games built into it.
Yeah.
So it doesn't come with the games, but it feels like the classic one. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So anyway, that's fun, but I think you can buy that for a couple $100.
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. So classic video games, vintage movie posters. Okay, that's a fun one.
Yep.
Vinyl records. Oh man, I've heard. I only see that in movies, but people care deeply about their vinyl records.
Well, and it's like it's making a comeback. Generally, vinyls on the whole, like people do that more of that now. But then again, there's like this rare, old form type of thing. And again, the condition matters on it. But yeah, it's a thing.
Historical documents, Rod. If you've got the Declaration of Independence. You're going to be in good
You're
shape.
You're in big trouble if you have that.
Oh,
one.
Wait. Yeah. Okay. You don't want
to. Yeah. They already tried that one. They made a movie about it, but.
Yeah. And it didn't go that well. Actually, it went pretty. It did go well for them. They got it back. And the people found the gold and got outrageously rich.
Yeah. That was really good. Good doing on their
what's
part.
That, what was, what's that called? What's that?
National Treasure.
National Treasure. National Treasure. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Vintage pens, Rod? Not just vintage fountain pen. What's a fountain pen, Rod? What's the difference?
The ink flows. So it's like the old version of a ballpoint, but they didn't have the ball in there. It would just hit the ink just kind of flowed as you did it. I almost said flowed.
Okay. I have a 14 karat gold, pen that my dad got from somewhere like 40 years ago.
Oh.
And I'm keeping it safe, man. One of these days, I probably will never sell it. And awesome. It's probably not worth that much. Okay. Japanese whiskey, Rod.
Yeah. It made the list.
This one I've never heard of. I've certainly heard of people like wines and things like that. Mm-hmm. And that is a big one. I mean, I always tell you, I follow the NBA and the NBA players, they have a thing for wine and they like mm-hmm. to invest in it. So that one I've heard, but Japanese whiskey, that one, I don't have a lot of experience there, right?
Yamazaki, Hibiki, Kuruizawa.
You do have a little experience in Japanese whiskey. Okay, maybe not the whiskey part.
Well, I definitely was with many people when they were imbibing their sake. So
so you have some experience.
Even though I wasn't drinking with them, it definitely was a thing. So, but yeah, I mean, again, it's just, the people who know what they're doing and get into it,
they roll with it, man.
Apparently the Japanese
whiskeys. Hey, Japanese whiskeys. Okay, so I have a shot glass collection, Rod. Now, I don't drink, but my shot glass collection is more for fun. I haven't ever mm-hmm. thought about it as an investment. But perhaps one day, one day it will be.
Yep.
Okay, we have rare gemstones, minerals. Okay, that's one that's interesting. There's like gemstone stores nowadays. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like this is becoming more and more popular. Now, obviously, like if you find some like, you know, cool rock that like that could be interesting, could be valuable, but it's becoming popular enough that what's the right word? I feel like it's becoming popular enough that you could like actively work in that place. Like just like there's a pawn shop, there's like these gem stores, right? So you could even go and find like I'm speculating a little bit, but I assume you could go and find rare, interesting, cool gems, even by like shopping at different gemstone stores and things like that.
Yep.
Okay.
You know what
political
you're doing.
Memorabilia, vintage space memorabilia. Okay, there's a bunch of examples. There's probably 100 more.
Absolutely.
Hopefully that at least gets your brain thinking a little bit. If you were like, hey, you know, I've been thinking about getting in the collectible market. I'm not sure where to start, what I want to go with. There's at least a few things to consider.
Good thinking about
I would probably start with Japanese whiskey, personally.
Okay.
Okay, Rod, let's finish this thing off by just focusing on the factors that we need to be considering when we're mm-hmm. investing. Because obviously we're talking about how it can be valuable, it can be fun and interesting, but what do we need to be concerned about? What do we need to be thinking about when we do it?
Yeah, this one may go without saying, but it's just all about the old economic factors of supply and demand, right?
Classic.
So the rarity matters, but if it's not in demand, then it doesn't matter. Right. Or even like doesn't have to necessarily be so rare, like probably some of the coins that you have or that other people collect, the more rare, the more it could be valuable, but it doesn't have to be rare, right? There could be hundreds of thousands of them still in, I'm going to call it circulation, but it's still available. But it brings a lot more value to it just because of the demand. Right.
Yeah, for sure. So classic supply and demand. We have to be thinking about that. And ideally, if it's rare, the chances are it's going to be in higher demand.
Yes.
Okay. That's a good one. What else we need to be thinking about?
Okay. And then we've kind of been hitting on this, but the condition matters, right? And again, in those antique shows, you see that comes through because they'll always comment on the condition. And then obviously the authenticity.
Critical piece,
yep.
Right? fakes aren't going to get, if you end up investing in fakes, you're probably not going to make a lot of money. Just, I'm just saying.
And that's where we talked earlier about like where you buy it matters. And in this case, if you don't have the eye yourself to know whether it's authentic, then working through a broker who does have that specialty is critical, right? Pay them what they deserve for having that knowledge, because if you buy one and you got duped and it's not authentic, then obviously you just wasted your money. So,
okay. We want to be thinking about its demand, its condition and authenticity. We want to be thinking about market trends.
Yeah.
Rod,
again,
what do you mean when we're talking, like, what does that mean to people? Market trends? I mean, like, what do you think of?
Yeah. I touched on it a little bit earlier, but there are like with an individual item, there are going to be trends depending on, again, let's just say it's an Olympic related something, right? And the Olympics are going to be happening in Paris here in a little bit. And so does the fact that the Olympics are coming around impact the value? You could tell that by price history or by seeing in other similar items in past valuations to see that. And so it's just doing the research or just having enough background yourself in being around that you see it, like you know what to watch for.
Okay, that's a good one. We've also got to be thinking about storage, because we've been talking about how we're looking for like tangible items.
Yeah.
Well, if I'm going to invest in cars, I probably don't just want to put them in my like front drive. I've got like this, I don't know, what's a really expensive Model T? I don't know cars, but I've got my Model T. I probably need a place to put it.
Yep. Where it's going to be preserved, right? And so the artwork as well. The question is, do you invest in artwork to display it, or do you buy it, lock it away to make sure nothing happens to it, and store it somewhere in a vault somewhere that nothing can get to?
It probably depends. It's probably situational. Absolutely. If you've got the Mona Lisa, you probably just got to store it, right? But okay, that's an interesting one. Well, the nice thing about art, though, is like you go hang it at some high place on your house, like it shouldn't have too much trouble. You know what I'm saying? I mean, maybe a little dusting here and there, and you should be able to preserve. So it's an interesting one. Okay, this next one is as big as any of them. Maybe the biggest thing to consider, especially because, again, we're talking about tangible assets.
Yeah.
It's not the same as when we own stock and we just like on the S&P 500, you know, on an exchange where we can just easily translate that to money, to dollars. We have to be thinking about the exit strategy.
Yep. And liquidity. So it's obviously, I mean, unless it's the coins, but even then, right, they have an intrinsic value, but then they also have their appraised value. And you don't want to be selling it for its intrinsic value just because you're short on cash and you need some liquidity. So you always have to be considering just the liquidity of it. And when you're ready to sell, there may not necessarily be the buyers there that you want or were hoping to get whatever price for it. And so you may have to be patient and wait, plan on being patient, right? So it's similar to a lot of the things that we invest in, where you go in with a plan, but you have to build in contingencies because it's not liquid. You can't control when is the best time to sell it. And so you have to build in a lot of flexibility with that.
Yeah. You don't want your emergency fund to be in a painting, right?
Right.
That may or may not sell when you want it to.
Yeah.
Now I say that, and like, obviously there's stuff that in the collectible world you can invest in that has a continual market, that you can actively do things. But anytime you're doing, like, you own something tangible, right, there is another layer of needing to consider how to create liquidity out of that and, you know, be able to do something with it.
Yeah. And an extension to that would be having relationships with reputable dealers or auction houses or collector communities, where when you're ready to liquidate, that you know where to find that ready market. It's not, you're not just at that moment trying to figure all that out.
Here's the real question, Rod. Do you think that we convince anybody in this conversation that they should jump into collectibles?
Probably if they've been thinking about it before. If this is like a brand new topic to them and they're just now realizing, oh, that could be a thing, then maybe probably
take
just
a few this more
wasn't
touches.
Enough. Yeah. But, you know, if there are people who have been thinking about it, like, oh, this is kind of an interesting topic and whatever, then, you know, maybe, hopefully, we gave them some thoughts or ideas that would be valuable in either starting
or
continuing the journey.
If you're somebody who's thinking about collectibles and you need some help, reach out to Rod. Reach out to Rod. At the very least, he can try to connect you with someone that is doing something similar. How about that?
There you go.
All right. I love it. Okay. Well, this has been a fun topic, Rod, a little bit different for us. Like we talked about, like it's not a core asset that we are consistently investing in, but we want people to be aware that it's certainly something that they could do well in. Cause we've seen it. Like we actually meet with people who bring up these kind of unique niche ideas and are doing quite well with it. And it kind of opens our mind up, and we want to make sure that we pass some of those ideas along to everybody else. Do you have any final thoughts, Rod?
Nope.
Okay. Well, let's call it then. This has been a fun conversation. Thanks everybody for listening, and we will see you next week.
Thank you for listening to the Money Insights Podcast. To learn more about the financial and business strategies discussed in this show, please visit moneyinsights.net. The views and opinions expressed on the Money Insights podcast are not intended to be individual financial, tax, or legal advice. Always consult with the appropriate advisor before making financial decisions. And if you're enjoying the show, please feel free to rate, subscribe, and leave a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. This will help others find the show and learn wealth-building strategies for themselves. Thanks again for tuning in, and we'll catch you in the next episode.